So just to say a few brief words about the third aliyah of Parshas Pinchas, and in order to do so, we'll have to dip in a little bit to the fourth aliyah also, because there's a continuity between them that we'll need to discuss. But we start off, and we close off as well, perhaps, on a theme very appropriate for the beginning of the 3 weeks. That here the aliyah is telling us about the division of the land of Eretz Yisrael, Eila, Techole, Ka'aretz, and there's a Machlokes, Tanoim, Gemara Bava Basra, and Daf Kuf Yudayim Bar Aleph, tells us about a Machlokes as to what exactly is the system here. Are we dividing up based on those who are coming in, based on those who left Mitzrayim, or some kind of combination of the two? It's a complicated system, how exactly it works. We won't go into all of the details, but just to mention, Rabbi Neuberger had a beautiful drush about this on Torah Web some time ago, where he emphasized the fact that here, this unique period in history where there was a division that involved a combination of the generations of the grandparents and the grandchildren, it's in order to emphasize that here entering into the land of Israel requires this kind of combination of zchuyos and this kind of combination of energies. And that's a part of what the system represents, and that there are those who believe that whatever they are focused on, whatever their contributions are, that that's what makes it happen, that's what makes the geula take place. And we have to appreciate that part of a Kadosh Baruch Hu system here is that it is the coming together of many different types of kochos and many different places of emphasis and many different strengths that is really what makes this happen. And my own great-great-grandfather, Rabbi Zvulun Leib Barit, was a rabbinic Zionist of his own in the late 1800s, and he wrote in letters that were exchanged with Ritzvi Hirsch Kalischer, he made a similar point. He referred to a Yalkut Shir Hashirim, where there is a statement that the winds, the north wind and the south wind, they fought with each other, and the northern wind said, I'm going to bring in the exiles, I'm going to bring about the Geula, and the southern wind said the same thing, I'm also going to bring in the Geula, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made peace between them, and he brought them all in through the same entrance. So he wanted to explain that the north and the south, these are references to placement within the Beis HaMikdash. We're talking about the Shulchan here, representing material sustenance, and also the menorah representing the Torah and the Talmidei Chachamim. And each one wants to play the primary role in bringing about the Geula. But, he says, ultimately it's going to be the harmony of everyone playing their unique role and working together towards the broader picture, bringing together their own instincts and talents and abilities in order to realize this vision of a Kadosh Baruch Hu for the Jews and for humanity of the Geula. And that's perhaps also what's being reflected here. So as we begin this period of the 3 weeks where we recognize that we need to come together in a more genuine way in order to reverse the galus. So this is a theme that very much resonates with us. Just on a technical point, here the Torah talks about the Goral, mentions the Goral twice here in Perek Chavav, in Pasuk Nun Hey and Pasuk Nun Vav. So the Ramban understands that there were two systems of lotteries here. There were two Gorals. There was a Goral that was used to divide the land among the Shvatim, and then within the Shvatim, there was also a Goral that was used for the families within the Shvatim. But Rashi and Parshas Matos, Rashi understands that there was one Goral to divide among the Shvatim, and then within the Shvatim, the Nasi figured out how to divide up the land within that. The Dvar Ram understood the Ramban to mean that even for Yechidim, there was a Goral. So how exactly the Goral fit in, what role was there for other types of human decision-making as far as division, that's somewhat of a machlokes, but we see that at least on some level the Torah is telling us that the Goral has a very holy place as far as how the land is divided, and that we have this complex system in order to make it happen. And then the Torah goes in to tell us the story of the Bnos Tzlofchad. And the Bnos Tzlofchad, who came to advocate on behalf of the Yerusha of their father, that their father had died. He was guilty of something. It's not clear exactly what he was guilty of. That's what it sounds like from the pasuk, that he was guilty of something. There are different theories in the Gemara as to what he did. Maybe he was the Mekoshesh Eitzim, maybe he was the Mapilim. Different theories as to what exactly was the cause of his death. We're just told that he was not a part of Adas Korach. Some of the Rishonim suggest that they wanted to emphasize that, so Moshe shouldn't feel any kind of specific animosity to him, and that maybe Moshe is trying to show that he doesn't feel any kind of issue and that he's going to deal with it objectively by the fact that he takes the issue directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Pasuk tells us. But in any event, he didn't have sons, so his daughters come and they advocate that his chelek should not be lost, but the chelek should go through them. And Chazal tell us that they are big heroes, that they knew what they were talking about, and that they represented many good midos, that they were chachmonios, they were darshanios, and they were tzidkonios. They were wise, and they were righteous, and they were very sharp. Among the reasons that Chazal say this is they tell us that they figured out that they had a good argument based on the halachos of Yibum. That one opinion is they brought this up when Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the laws of Yibum, that if a man dies without children, so then there has to be Yibum in order to uphold his shame. So they came and argued, so where do the daughters fit in? So if the daughters are able to exempt somebody from Yibum, as is the way we assume, so then that means that they are upholding the shame, so therefore they should hold on to his property as well. And if you're going to tell me that not, you're going to tell me that they're not going to inherit his properties, they're not a continuation of his shame, so then their mother should do Yibum. There should be a halacha of Yibum there. So their sharpness in applying that din to make their case is one of the points the Gemara brings up in order to emphasize where they were coming from. And these many statements of praise that Chazal have, the Medrash Rabbah also points out that in general, the women at that time were Godre Peretz, that they were the ones who were fixing all the problems and who were avoiding all the mistakes that the men were making. So they weren't a part of the Egel Hazav, the Medrash emphasizes. They weren't a part of the Chet Meraglim, and also those who didn't want to go into the land. So here, this is an example of the women coming to show the opposite, that they were expressing that they want to take over their father's chelek in the land, they want to go in. And this is a part of the praise. And another statement that Chazal have to emphasize just how much they're considered to be heroic. So the Torah says in Pasuk Dalet here, in Parachov Zion, Pasuk Dalet, Kein b'no slovcha dovros, that they're speaking correctly, that they're right, the Kadosh Baruch Hu supports their position. So the Gemara has a statement that Megalgalin z'chus al yidei zakai, that this is something that really could have been taught without them, but because they were righteous and deserving, so they were able to bring about that the din should be communicated through their question. It's fascinating just in terms of the drush. So if you look in different svarim, so they ask on Rashi and they ask on the Gemara, that you could say this also about the ones in Parshas Baloscha who brought up the question about Pesach Sheni, that led to Pesach Sheni being taught in the Torah. So there's some different languages. Sometimes it sounds like we're saying more that the schus is to the questioner here, and sometimes it says like it's more in the case of Pesach Sheni. So you can find opposite drushes depending what svarim you look at, that some distinguish, and they say that in this case, it was all, the whole halacha was generated by the passion of the questioner. The din wasn't necessarily there until the questioner asked it. The question is in which case? So some svarim say that's true about Pesach Sheni, that Pesach Sheni really would have been that if you're not able to be there, so you're an honest, if you're a tame, you can't do it, so it happens. Sometimes people are not able to participate in something, and it's just the way it is. But because those main ace came with such passion, they said they want to be a part of the mitzvah, so that created the halacha. And Kadosh Baruch Hu then made it that they should have the concept of Pesach Sheni in their schus. It wouldn't have been without their question. But it's not the case when it comes to B'nai Slovchad, that there this was always the din, and they just had the ability to bring out what the din was going to be no matter what. And those who say the exact opposite, that Davka, their schus was what brought this about. So you can find opposite Rashi's in different Svarim that are being medayik in the language of Rashi, in the language of the Gemara, as far as what it means and when it says it and when it doesn't say it, that there's a special zchus to the questioner in these dinim, that the din of the Torah is taught because of their questions. So we find that they are given credit for what they're asking, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu agrees with them, and indeed that's the din, that if there are no sons, so then the chelek goes through the daughters, and that this is true not only about Chalukas Haaretz, but it's true about Yerusha in general. So normally when there is a property, when a man dies, so he leaves his property, and so the din of the Torah is that the Yerusha goes to the sons. But if there are no sons, so then the Yerusha goes to the daughters. And essentially it's the same din, and so the Torah continues from here to tell us this din as it applies to Yerusha. So just to say a few words about that, because as far as contemporary halacha is concerned, so by din Torah we have this rule that the Yerusha only goes to the sons and not to the daughters, and there's also a double chelek to the Bechor. So we have these halachos as far as how property is to be divided among heirs when somebody passes away. Now, in practice, in general, there are ways to arrange things differently, and how exactly that happens, that's a big discussion we won't get into now, whether there is a validity to a secular will, as Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote, or whether there are other approaches to do what we call a shtar chatzi zacher, or a shtar zacher shalim, different ways that are set up to ensure that actually the daughters do inherit, whether they inherit, as older traditions had it, a half of a chelek, or maybe a full chelek, ishtar zachar shalim. So it's very striking that this is a mechanism that is utilized, and it seems like it's kind of getting around the halacha, that here the Torah says that this is what's supposed to happen, that the Yerusha is supposed to go this way to the sons and not to the daughters. And yet, in practice, because these mechanisms are utilized, so it seems like we are thwarting the din of the Torah. And this is not something that's only done in certain circles. This is something which is done very widely and is also advocated very strongly. And you can find in the Gesher HaChaim, and in many other such forum, that they say that it would be a big mistake to not do this, to not create a system where you make sure that the daughters inherit also. That would be a terrible mistake, and you think you're going to follow everything Kedasu Kedin. So people who try to do that, there ends up being terrible machlokas and terrible problems, and therefore we're recommending that this is not the way to go, that you should make sure, indeed, to set up some kind of an arrangement that the daughter should inherit as well. And Rabbi Willig recently gave a shiur about this at the Day of Learning. He went through many of the approaches of how that works, but he also emphasized that this is not just kind of a b'di'evit kind of thing that some people do, but he was saying very strongly that this is his recommendation, this is what everybody absolutely should do. So it's very striking that here this seems to be at odds with the intent of the Torah, and we have to figure out why it is that we're not only tolerating but also even advocating something that is so different from what the Torah seems to ideally advocate. So on the surface, what you find in these forum that talk about this, Rav Dychowski has a lot to say about this in his forum. Rav Herzog in his day wanted to make a takana that everyone should do this. Laman HaShalom says a big emphasis on Shalom as the reason. So that's certainly a huge value, as we know. We've spoken about that a lot recently. There's no question that we put a big emphasis on Shalom. But it's very striking if that's the only explanation, if we're saying that essentially, yes, it's true, the Torah had a certain model, but we're just going to go away from that model, Laman HaShalom. So yes, Shalom is a huge Torah value, but to say that that's the case, we're just replacing one Torah value with another. So that's a little bit unusual, and be a little bit surprising. So it's a good question whether there are perhaps clues in the text over here that this whole parsha of Bnos Slofchad is maybe itself giving us a little bit of an opening to understand that the nature of the dinim of Yerusha, as the Torah dictates, on the one hand, yes, it is a mitzvah, but also it's set up because of certain realities of society, and it's not necessarily that the Ratzon HaTorah is specifically that it should happen this way to the exclusion of the daughters. And maybe, therefore, it's not just that we're replacing the din of the Torah with values of Shalom, but that maybe there's some room to discern that within the intent of the Torah, and that maybe this whole story of Tzlafchad, the Bnos Tzlafchad, is also a part of that. It's a very striking Sifri over here, that when the Pasuk tells us that the Bnos Tzlafchad came forward and made their case, the Medrash, the Sifri, has a very, very striking statement. And it says that their argument was, in addition to what we've mentioned so far, but their argument was that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is different than Basar Badam, that God is not like human beings, that the language was, it said, Lo k'rachamei Basar Badam, rachamei hamakom, Basar Badam, rachamav al azcharim, yosem and hakebus. That when it comes to human beings, so they have more compassion on the men than on the women, more on the males than on the females. Aval misha amar v'haya ha'olam, eino kein, ela al hazcharim, v'al hanakevus, rachamav al hakol. That he has rachmanis on the men and the women equally. Shanamar tov hashem lakol v'rachamav al kol masa v'pasik in Tehillim. So that's already very striking, that here they're making their argument by saying that human beings, they have a tendency to favor the men, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not that way, and his Rachmanis is equal. So first of all, what is that Medrash getting at? It's a very strong statement, and it's in his commentary. So he suggests that to see the portion of their father totally leave the family because there were no sons, so that would have been a source of great anguish for them, and that they should get Rachmanis, that Kadosh Baruch Hu would have Rachmanis on them, and that's presumably the din. They shouldn't have to see their family lose out on the legacy because there were no sons. But it seems like there's that, and maybe a little bit more in this Medrash. Looking at the way the Torah Tamima comments here, he perhaps makes it even more striking in his formulation. He says, we got to figure out why this is, that there seems to be more Rachmanis for males among Basar Vadam, and where do you see that? He actually points to the Gemara in Horius that talks about Kedimus and Hatzala, which is also something that we don't find normally in practice for many reasons. But he goes on to discuss there. He says that perhaps it's just that the circumstances of the world is that men are more involved in keeping society running, at least that was the situation at the time, and therefore, so human beings tend to feel more sympathy in that direction, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not that way, and that's what this Medrash is emphasizing. So perhaps one of the key messages that comes out of this whole parsha is that, yes, there are certain realities about how property is allotted, and that the Torah recognizes these realities and commands these realities, but they reflect certain conventions of society, and they're not meant to make any statement about the relative value of men and women. And in fact, if the circumstances are such that there should be a different kind of distribution, so we can't change the din of the Torah, but the idea that there's room for allowing a mechanism, even recommending and advocating a mechanism that will bring about a different result, that maybe that's not contradicting the Ratzon HaTorah per se, because the Ratzon HaTorah is not necessarily inherently that there should be a absolute distinction between men and women in this, but it's just reflecting a certain reality of how society operates, and if there's a reason to assume that society is functioning differently, so then maybe there is some flexibility there that wouldn't be considered a violation of the spirit of the Torah. And it's also very striking that at the end of this whole section, in the middle of the fourth Aliyah, so the Torah has the phrase Chukas Mishpat, and the commentaries discuss, the Malbim has a discussion over here in the Panim Yafos and others, that phrase Chukas Mishpat seems like a contradiction in terms. A chok is something we don't really understand, and Mishpat is something based on principles that we feel we can understand. And they suggest that when it comes to the Dinim of Yerusha, there's some kind of a combination here. There are elements where we're applying our judgment as to what's fair and what's equitable and what's going to work best for society. And there's parts here of mitzvah that we don't necessarily understand, the part of chok, and there is some kind of a combination here. It's not a standard kind of a mitzvah where you could say that there is one clear Ratzon HaTorah that is going to be threatened if there is anything in practice that has anything different. As far as why it is that Me'ikar HaDin, the Torah tells us that the property should go specifically through the males, at least if there are males, so why should that be? So the Ralbag writes over here that it's because the assumption is that when women get married, so then their husbands are going to be involved in their property. So if we're interested that when a man dies, the property should stay within his family, so then we want to guarantee that through putting it through the line of the sons, who are not going to take the property out of the family. So that's perhaps a part of it. And again, that's something which also has a connection to social realities, and certainly even Din HaTorah, that if there were no sons, so what the Torah is telling us is that certainly it's more in the family if it will stay with the daughters than if it wouldn't. The Torah Tamima over here, so he comments that he thinks that there's a fundamental difference between Yerusha Saben and all the other relatives, that even though if there were no children at all, so then the property goes to other relatives, but when you're dealing with the son, if there is a son, so then the son is just automatically in the place of the father, so it's just kind of a metzias that the property ends up in his possession, and it's not something that Torah even spells out. We learn it out by inference that if there is no son, this is what happens, but Torah doesn't have to tell us that the property l'chachila goes to the son, because that was just a reality of how life worked. The son stepped into his father's place, and therefore the property is naturally there. Now, in the Sefer Chavetzal Sasharan, and he talks about this from a Lamdasha perspective, this assumption that there's a fundamental difference between the Yerusha of the son and other relatives, and he says it could be that's also true by the daughter, when the daughter does inherit Midin of the Torah. So if there's no sons and the daughters inherits, also could be that that's kind of an automatic, and that that's the nature. But again, the structure as it's laid out, that's how the Torah Tamima is explaining that this is basically something that happens automatically, and that's what the Torah is reflecting. So perhaps what you see here is that there's some combination of just realities that are socially and culturally defined and that are reflecting the way the world operates, but there's somewhat of a distance between the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu really perceives people. It's what the Medrash is telling us, that everybody is equal as far as God's Rachman, but as far as the realities of life, sometimes there's reasons for treating people differently, and then as far as if circumstances may indicate otherwise, so that's not necessarily a thwarting of the Kavanas HaTorah. So it's not just about Shalom overwhelming the Din of the Torah, but it's not perhaps that there really is necessarily a fundamental contradiction. And we could maybe suggest also that that's emphasized by another point, that this discussion about Yerusha, so it ends in the middle of the fourth Aliyah, and then right after that, so Pasuk Yibayz, it turns to what seems to be a very different topic, to God talking to Moshe and telling him again about the fact that he is not going to be going into the land and he's going to turn the leadership over to Yehoshua. So that seems a very abrupt change of subject. So Rashi over here gives some explanations as to why that is. And one explanation Rashi gives is has to be reemphasized here, because it sounds like in the parsha of Bnos Lavchad that HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially changed. Again, how exactly to relate to that is discussion, but it sounds like they came and they made a taina and they got what they asked for. So you shouldn't think that, okay, maybe Moshe's situation also changed. So therefore, the Torah is emphasizing, no, this is a gzeira, this is staying. And even though the Bnos Lavchad came and they made this claim and their claim was granted, but this is not changing. So perhaps here also, just to reflect backwards, it's also emphasizing that there's a difference here. So for whatever reason, the Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu was that Moshe not enter the land. That was something we spoke about in past weeks. But that's different than what's being expressed here as far as Yerusha is concerned. So it's a lot to try to understand, and we know that just we're working backwards from the reality that Bizman Hazeh, it's widely done, that the portions are given out equally, or certainly that the girls inherit. And as we emphasize, this is not something that is only done in some circles and we frown upon it, but quite the opposite. You find all the Svarim saying that this is something that should be done. This is what Rav Dyachovsky writes in a sefer, that he's dealt with Yerusha cases all over the Jewish population, and that everyone does this, and it's something that we're advocating and that we're saying really should be done. So either we're saying that the Shalom factor is so strong, or we're forced to see that perhaps there is some room for this in the din itself. So I'll just maybe close by noting that as far as the Tamei HaMitzvos for the whole concept of Yerusha, so the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, in Chelek Gimel, in Perek Membeis, that you shouldn't hold back good from that, from those who can benefit from it and those who should benefit from it. So when a person dies, he shouldn't think, okay, so I'm not going to be around anyway, so who cares what happens to my property? But he should care, and he should want that his property should be able to be of benefit to those who are most roi for it, and who's most roi for it. So his family are the ones who are most roi for it, and also to be able to show that care and your concern for the welfare of your families. That's a ava for the family, and that's something which is appropriate. And the mitzvah of nachla, of Yerusha, is a way of conveying that. In the Sefer Achinuch over here, in the Mitzvah Tov, the 400th Mitzvah, so he writes that it's a chesed of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that God wants really that what we work for and acquire and earn over the course of our lifetime, so it should stay with us. And ideally, we would live forever, and we'd be able to benefit from everything that we have acquired and that we can put to good use. But we don't live forever, so there's a gzeira of misa on the world. So if we're not going to live ourselves, so then at least we should be able to keep what we have acquired within our family, so that the legacy of that should be able to continue in that direction. And the Sefer Achinuch writes that that's the purpose of the mitzvah of Nachla. It's a reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed, that he wants that people should be able to continue to benefit from what they have work to acquire, and if not they themselves, then at least it will stay in the family. So you could suggest that with both of these Tamei HaMitzvos, so first of all, a big part of what is acquired is certainly the biggest part of what is acquired, the most important part of what is acquired is not the material goods, but it's the family itself. The family is the Iker legacy of the person, more than any physical property. And if that family is going to be torn apart by machlokas, because the way the property is given out, so that itself is not only a problem for Shalom, it's a problem for the Din of Yerusha. The Din of Yerusha, as the Sefer Achinuch is explaining what the purpose is itself going to be undermined. And the Rambam's point about that we should want that we should care about our family, and that we should want them to benefit from what we have acquired. So all the more so, we should want also that they should do so b'shalom, that they should do so in a way that preserves the harmony. So one could perhaps suggest that, again, it's not necessarily that shalom is outweighing this din, but that this din itself functions for reasons that shalom should be a part of as well, and therefore to make sure that yes, that there should be a Yerusha to the family, but that it should also incorporate the cheshbonos of shalom, and that this is what all the Sfarim are highlighting, that if one does not make sure to account for all of the children, so then there is going to be a tremendous threat to shalom. So perhaps that also goes to the core of what this mitzvah is about, and that's something which is very, very crucial. And again, as we look towards the 3 weeks and this theme of looking to inherit the land, looking to reverse the galus, and recognizing that our lack of shalom and our sinas chinam is what keeps us in galus, so this re-emphasis on the integration of shalom into the very concept of what it means to inherit, what it means to inherit the land, what it means to carry on the legacy of our ancestors, how it is absolutely crucial that shalom is an absolute part of that, that is something that we can certainly learn a lot from as we internalize, and to emphasize once again that the Gula will come. Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah that the fast days will be observed as holidays when there is Shalom. So the more we are able to properly appreciate that, the better off we are. There are some who suggest that the Parshas HaMoedim is read also in Parshas Pinchas in order to remind us of that promise, that Parshas Pinchas, which is read always during the 3 weeks, and we read about the festivals, that we should remember that there is a Haftacha, that ultimately these days that we observe as fast days and days of crying will be observed as days of celebration. And the Gemara says, when's that going to happen? It's going to happen Bizman Shiyei Shalom, when we are able to bring peace into our existence, into our consciousness, into our reality, and into practice. So that's when the Moedim will be the proper characterization of these days that we observe during the 3 weeks. And it is our fervent wish that Ken Yehi Ratzon B'Karov B'Yameinu. Should have a wonderful Shabbos.